Today I will be reading the introduction summary from Canto 9, Chapter 10, and I will try to cover verse 1 and 2 as well. The introduction is rather long, and it deals with the pastimes of the Supreme Lord Ramachandra, which proves to be very, very fascinating, interesting, and absorbing for many reasons, which I'll try to get into. Since I'll be making some brief comments along the way as I read the summary, I would prefer to offer my respects to Srila Prabhupada now. Omagyana timirandas yaganjana shalakaya chakshur unmalitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge, and I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. Excuse me. This 10th chapter describes how Lord Ramachandra appeared in the dynasty of Maharaj Katvanga. It also describes the Lord's activities, telling how he killed Ravan and returned to Ayodhya, the capital of his kingdom. Anybody remember the name of that kingdom? Starts with a K? Huh? Kosala? Yeah. The son of Maharaj Katvanga was... Excuse me. The son of Maharaj Katvanga was Dirgabahu, and his son was Raghu. The son of Raghu was Ajja. The son of Ajja was Dasharath. And the son of Dasharath was who? Yes, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the Lord descended... into this world, in his full quadruple expansion as Lord Ramachandra, Lakshmana, Bharata, and Shatrughna, great sages like Valmiki, who were actually in knowledge of the Absolute Truth, described his transcendental pastimes. Srila Shukdev Goswami describes these pastimes in brief, and this is very brief. Lord Ramachandra went with Vishvamitra and killed Rakshasas like Maricha. The reason he went with him is that various demons were obstructing, hindering, desecrating the sacrifice that Vishvamitra and his associates were performing by throwing unmentionable things on the fire. Consequently, causing impurity to take place. Since the sages were under a vow of not wishing to curse or punish or harm anyone at this time during the sacrifice, they called upon Lord Ramachandra, who at that time was only 15 years old. After breaking the stout and strong bow, well, what happened is after the sacrifice, Vishvamitra Muni took Lord Ramachandra and Lakshman to Mithila, where a challenge was made, the challenge being as to whether Lord Ramachandra could lift and string a very powerful bow of Lord Shiva. Many, many warriors had tried and failed. So, as it's mentioned over here, after breaking the stout and strong bow known as Haradanu, the Lord married Mother Sita and cut down the prestige of Parashuram. Parashuram challenged. He was also incarnation of Krishna. It's kind of humorous because they're playing out a little role here. Two incarnations... ready to duke it out. it's kind of funny. But anyway, Parashuram, being very much in the warrior mentality, although he was a Brahmin. He challenged Lord Ramachandra. He says, you've broken that bow, which is the bow of Lord Shiva, but can you break the bow of Lord Vishnu? So Lord Ramachandra at that time didn't want any trouble. He didn't want any problems. He wanted to keep things cool. So then again, Parashuram says, can you break the bow of Shiva? Huh? Like that. He said, oh, here, let me have it. So he took it and he strung it, broke it, and that was the end of it. So Parashuram, he was very impressed. And actually, he knew that would happen. This is his incarnation of God. And he wanted to demonstrate that it's time for Parashuram, to step back and engage in austerities, which is what he wanted to do in the mountains, and let Lord Ramachandra now take the way as the incarnation, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, whenever and wherever there is a... I'm sorry. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, I myself appear millennium after millennium. So that's the purpose that Lord Ramachandra appears in the world, to deliver the pious, annihilate lots of miscreants, especially Rakshasas who are killing Brahmins left and right. And setting a perfect example, which I'll go into in just a few moments, as to what his mission is. Lord Ramachandra, pardon? Did I end before? Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah, I turned the page a little too soon, so. Where's the first page? Oh. Yes. So I'll read this again. The son of Raghu was Ajah. The son of Ajah was Dasharath. And the son of Dasharath was Lord Ramachandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the Lord descended into this world in his full quadruple expansion as Lord Ramachandra, Lakshmana, Bharat, and Shatrughan, great sages like Valmiki, who were actually in knowledge of the absolute truth, described his transcendental pastimes. Srila Shukdev Goswami describes these pastimes in brief, and here they are. Lord Ramachandra went with Vishvamitra and killed Rakshasas like Maricha. After breaking the stout and strong bow known as Haradanu, the Lord married Mother Sita and cut down the prestige of Parashuram. To obey the order of his father, he entered the forest accompanied by Lakshmana and Sita. This is gets a little complex at this point. It happens to be that King Dasharath, in a very big battle at one point, he was shot with an arrow and he went unconscious. And it just happened to be that his wife Kakayi accompanied him to that battle, and she was standing on the sidelines, and when she saw that her husband had been severely wounded, she immediately ran and jumped up on the chariot and drove the horses off the field. A little while later, the king recovered and realized what had happened. And so he said, in common parlance, I really owe you. So she shook her head. He says, yes, I want to give you some boons, blessings. Please ask for them now. And she said, no, not now. She said, please. She said, later I can ask for them. So that's exactly what happened. At the time when Lord Ramachandra was about to be installed as the king, the maidservant of Kakayi, Mantara, urged her mistress, Kakayi, to ask for the boons. And the boons that she should ask for are, number one, to get Lord Ramachandra exiled from the kingdom for 14 years, and second of all, that her son, Bharat, should become the next king. So that's at first, Kakai was very averse to this. She did not want to do this. She was actually a very virtuous woman. She was a princess before she was married. Nonetheless, Mantra played upon her weakness that she would be demoted to the point of being a servant of Lord Ramchandra's mother, Kaushalya, and continued to harp on this point. You'll be nobody, you'll be nothing, you'll be just like a servant woman, and your son, probably Ram will kill him so that he's not a threat to his own kingship. So after a while, what happened is that she got convinced and she got frightened. So she went into what is called the sulking room. They had in those days sulking rooms where if a woman was very gloomy and upset and disturbed, they'd go into the room, sometimes they called the anger room, and she would just lie down in a disordered, her hair in a disarray, clothes kind of almost strewn. And anyway, that was the time King Dasarath came, and he was looking for her, and then he went into the sulking room, and in the sulking room he saw his wife, she's just crying. And she kept saying, no, 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 like that. And finally he said, I'll do anything to help you, to console you, so that you don't feel such sorrow. What can I do? So she said, will you keep your promise if I ask you to do something? Yeah, of course, because he loved her very greatly, very strongly. So that's what he asked for. You send, she said, you send Ram to the forest for 14 years. 14 years she felt would be enough to make everybody forget Lord Ramchandra, as Bharat would be the reigning king. And send him to the forest. And what was the second thing? What is that? Yes, make Bharat the king. The king, and Ram goes to the forest. So anyway, that's what finally happened. Bharat, however, was just as virtuous and just as loving, just as kind, and just as brave and powerful as Lord Ramchandra. As it's mentioned here and mentioned later on, all four brothers were all Vishnu Tattva, unlike many of the Mayavad philosophers like to believe that actually none are Vishnu Tattva. They're referred to as ordinary persons. However, Lord Ramchandra is referred to as one who has seen the light, so to speak. He has the full knowledge of his true divine identity. But as a human being, he doesn't have his powers. This is what is stated in some of the Ramayans. I've read through them. It's very dangerous. They do not regard Lord Ramchandra as the Supreme Lord, although he's recognized as having the knowledge of the Supreme Lord. And in having the knowledge of the Supreme Lord, what they in effect are saying is that everyone here, in fact, I went to one of these impersonalists' talks, and the Swami there said, this is not recently, the Swami there said, all of you, there's a murti of Krishna on the altar, all of you are equal to Krishna. He said, all you have to do is just keep meditating. Keep meditating. And the maya, the illusion, will gradually disappear. And finally, when the illusion is gone and the light begins to shine, you will see this little light, and the light will become broader, wider, greater, and you will gradually merge into the light which is your true identity. And when you merge into the light which is your true identity, you will all be equal to Krishna and Rama and Vamana. All of these are simply human beings who merged into the light and then came out with knowledge. Okay? And sometimes they manifested powers, And sometimes they didn't. In the case of Lord Ramachandra, he hardly manifested powers, except at one time he threatened to dry up the ocean when Varuna refused to accede to his order to enable the stones that would be thrown into the ocean to cross the ocean in order to reach Lanka. He wanted them to float. Now, stones, we know, don't float. Stones sink. But Varuna, having the power to be able to make a reverse of gravity, gravity pulls things down. And as we know, there are counterbalancing forces that can make things go up. Like an airplane goes up and it stays up because of counterbalancing effects which take place. When they used to be propellers, now they have jets. Anyway, the main point was that... I don't know what the main point was. What was the last thing I said? Anybody remember? Okay. So, I'll just pick it up from where I left off. The point being is that, is that Lord Ramachandra... What was that? Yes, thank you. Thank you, because I wanted to... I didn't conclude that. So, the point is this, is that when you hear... this, and Prabhupada gives good warning in the first few purports about this, because they will fool you or delude you into the belief that you're equal to all of these, and that makes people who go to these talks feel very elated, very uplifted, because everyone has come into this world to feel like a Lord, to be a Lord, to think he's a Lord, and to act upon the world in such a way that actually people convinced that he's powerful, great, and glorious, and famous, and and quite competent. So people like that. Wow, I can just close my eyes, see the light, merge with the light, and then I become God. I'm equal to Krishna. I'm equal to Shiva. I'm equal to Vamanadeva, Rama. So this is the very opposite of what we preach. Their ultimate goal is what they call nirvikalpa samadhi, which is the emergence of the consciousness, individual consciousness, with that supreme Brahman. So Srila Prabhupada mentions that this is completely bogus, and I think Rudra Karma did a very excellent job yesterday in explaining this carefully, that the infinite light is, as Krishna himself says, I am the source of impersonal Brahman. Therefore, impersonal Brahman is incomplete without Bhagavan and without without the super soul, Paramatma. So the important point is to stay away from books which have this impersonalistic view. And you will see it immediately when they begin to talk about Lord Ramachandra as an ordinary human being. This is to me the grossest, most terrible thing. And that this is to make us feel that, yeah, to feel a false sense of at-one-ment or oneness with Lord Ramachandra, which is wrong. The Lord is higher, greater, bigger, grander, always above us. We're never equal to, we can certainly never be greater than the Lord. Our business is to be at the feet of the Lord. And by being at the feet of the Lord, we gain the grace of the Lord. And when we gain the grace of the Lord, we feel internal or inner bliss. The bliss of the Mayavadi is nothing more than peacefulness. But the bliss of the Bhakta is more than peacefulness. It is very dynamic. It is very full of enthusiasm, full of depth of spiritual emotions, full of variegatedness. So therefore, it is recommended that we proceed with the process of bhakti. So, I will continue. Any questions on this point before I move on? Okay. Archita, could you tell me where I left off? What is that? Okay. Yes. After breaking the stout and strong bow known as Haradano, the Lord married Mother Sita and cut down the prestige of Parashuram. To obey the order of his father, he entered the forest, accompanied by Lakshmana and Sita. There he cut off the nose of Shurpanakha. She was a demoness, not very pretty, so cutting her nose off may have made her look even more beautiful. Possible. But anyway, she didn't think so. Her vanity provoked her to demand from her brother Ravan that this Lakshman and Ram, his brother, both of them should be killed. So he cut off the nose of Shurpanakha and killed the associates of Ravan, headed by Kara and Dushana. Ravana's kidnapping of Sita Devi was the beginning of this demon's misfortune. When Maricha assumed the form of a golden deer, Maricha was a demon, as was mentioned earlier. He could change his form at will, and many of the Rakshasas have these various types of powers in which they can assume different forms. Throughout the Krishna narrative, we see that different demons assume the form of Bakasura, assume the form of... Who is the Mataji who was trying to... Putana? Yeah, so she assumed the form of... She was not very pretty, but she assumed the form of a very beautiful woman who looked like Lakshmi Devi. And then there were a number of other demons that they assumed these different forms. So sometimes devotees get the idea that if you have these types of powers, that you must be spiritual to get them. Not at all. Powers can be developed irrespective and aside from spiritual advancement. It is true that persons who are genuinely and deeply pure and advanced do have powers which they generally don't make use of unless inwardly guided to do so. And when inwardly guided, they will do so. Many saints do this through prayer, and they're inwardly guided to pray for someone, and then the Lord, acceding to that request, grants the blessing, grants the benediction, and the person thinks that it is the saint who did the healing. But those true, pure saints, they deny any responsibility. They said, I only prayed. The real doer, the real healer, the real person behind it is God, Krishna. He has the power. So don't worship me. If you want to respect me, that's fine. But the person who you should honor, whom you should worship, who you should glorify, is the Supreme Lord, who has power over everything. So this is the difference between demoniac mystic powers and devotee mystic powers. A totally different attitude. Demoniac, they are very proud of their position. They enjoy the idea of showing off their powers. We even have some swamis, they come and they do that. They do something like this with their hand, and suddenly they produce a watch or they produce a necklace, these things, and people are wowed by this. You know, it's like that, what is that program? America's Got Talent? They should go on that program, and then they could win $1 million immediately. So the important point is that these things are meaningless. There are techniques which one can learn in order to be able to get control of the different chakras, which are wheels of power. And when one gains those controls, then one can go underwater and live there if you want to. We saw Shobri Muni. Was that the... Yeah, Shobri Muni. He did that. He was living under the water, and unfortunately he looked at the wrong fish and got into a lot of trouble. He did. Of course, that was the result of his unfortunate... cursing of Garuda, that if he came into that area he would die, simply because he became attached to the... That's another thing. You get these powers and you're underwater and you look at all these fish, they become like your children. So what happened to your detachment? You lost it. He treated the fish as if they were his children. So there you are. And then what happened as a result of what he did, of course, he had to marry 50 women, and then from 50 women, I think he had 100 children from each of the women. That's 5,000 kids. That's a lot of big family to take care of. So anyway, getting back to the And the important point is that Sita Devi was kidnapped. And when she was kidnapped, Lord Ramachandra, accompanied by Lakshman, searched for her throughout the forest. In the course of this search, they met Jatayu. Does anybody know who Jatayu is? Loud so we all hear, and then I'll repeat it. No, I'm asking you. Yeah, he was a vulture. Yeah, he was a vulture. But he was a good guy, good vulture. He was a vulture, and he was very, very... He was a devotee vulture, and he could speak. He could speak words. And he was completely sold out to Lord Ramchandra. So when he saw Sita being kidnapped, and Ravana put her on his, what they call, his pushpa, or his flower airplane, he flew up, and he began to fight. He used his wings for fighting, and he got some good shots in. He was really banging Ravan's face with those wings, and banging them back and forth. Finally, Ravan got tired of it. He pulled out his sword, and he just cut off his wings, and he fell down. Now, Lord Ramachandra, when he came by, he saw that Jatayu was moaning, and he asked him what had happened, and Jatayu explained that Ravan had kidnapped Sita, and they went up into the air and went flying someplace. So, Lord Ramachandra was very pleased and very, very impressed by the fact that this vulture not only took the time and the trouble to try to protect and defend Sita, but actually lost his life, or sacrificed his life just to save her. So he did the funeral ceremony, all the prayers of this particular vulture, Jatayu. And his brother, Sampati, also figures very strongly later on in the story. Sampati is the one who tells the various monkeys who go looking for Sita where exactly she went. Because he had very great sight. When he went up in the air, he saw Ravan flying over the ocean and where he took. So that's a very important name as well. Sampati, the brother of Jatayu. Then the Lord killed the demon Kambanda and the commander Vali and established a friendly relationship with Sugriva. So Sugriva was the brother of Vali, and for a circumstance or situation which I won't go into, Vali exiled his brother Sugriva, and due to a misunderstanding. So Sugriva and Hanuman and a few other major players were up on the Rishimukh Hill, and they were living there. And that's where Lord Ramachandra, while he was wandering looking for Sita, he found Sugriva and Hanuman there. And what happened is that they established a friendship. The friendship, or the pact was that Sugriva, he said, if you can help me re-obtain my kingdom, get me back my kingdom, make me the king, then I will help you with the entire army of monkeys. There are millions and millions of monkeys. They all talk too. They were not ordinary monkeys. Probably Mr. Darwin would be very happy to hear that. So, but yeah, there were talking monkeys, and some of them were highly educated, like Hanuman. He spoke beautiful Vedic language. When he spoke, it was like he was speaking the scriptures. So, in fact, when he first met Lord Ramachandra, he spoke in such beautiful poetry. And Lord Ramachandra recognized that this is his eternal devotee. Anyway, what happened was that they formed this friendship, and I'll read it. It tells right over here. After organizing the military strength of the monkeys and going with them to the shore of the sea, that's way down in the south, southern India, the Lord awaited the arrival of Samudra. Does anybody know who Samudra is? Yes, it's also known as Varuna. Does anybody know who Varuna is? Yeah, the ocean god. He's the He controls the oceans, the waters, essentially. So he's also known as Samudra. I didn't know that until I read this and looked it up in Google. The ocean personified. But when Samudra did not come, in other words, he called upon him. The reason Lord Ramachandra called upon him is for the reason I mentioned earlier, is that they wanted to build a causeway, a little bridge from the mainland of India over to Lanka. But to do that, you have to have you have to be able to float the rocks. So that's what happened. So he called upon Samudra and or Varuna, and Varuna didn't come. So finally, Lord Ramachandra, exhausted with and apparently losing patience, sat down on the shore and stated that if you do not come, I will dry up this entire ocean, and what service will you have then? So he came very quickly. He came up, yes, I'm so sorry, my lord. Sometimes the demigods get a little bit proud. As we know, Lord Brahma got proud, and tried to test Lord Krishna. Indra got proud. He did his test. But they always end up losing, of course, because it's foolishness. It's the mode of ignorance that takes over temporarily. It's the child in us saying, let me see if you can do this. Let me see if you can do this. It's that kind of a mentality. You know, you want to see if it's true. So that the same thing is happening here. And but of course, Samudra did not want to take the chance of his ocean drying up. Then he would have been out with no devotional service and may have had to come back as a who knows what, as an ordinary human being. But he had a position and he had a service. So then Samudra came to the Lord with great haste and surrendered to him, wanting to help him in every way. The Lord then attempted to bridge the ocean, and with the help of advice from Vibhishan, he attacked Ravan's capital. So who is Vibhishan? Yeah, the brother of Ravan. Ravan had two brothers, Vibhishan, and who is the third? Who is the other one? Starts with a K? Kumbhakarna, yes. And Kumbhakarna and Ravan are the incarnations of which two divine figures from the eternal world? Yes, wonderful. That's good. Jai and Vijay incarnated originally as Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, and then after Hiranyaksha, then we have Ravan and Kumbhakarna, and then we have Shishupal and who? Dantavakra. It's good. I'm glad you're all reading the books. That's what Prabhupada wanted. He said, I don't want you to just distribute my books. He says, that's great, but please read them, know them, so that if anybody asks you, as I'm asking you, you'll know the answers to these. And that's very, very encouraging. So, as it's mentioned here, the forces of Lord Ramachandra were millions of monkeys, and they all attacked. And what happened was that they killed all the Rakshasa soldiers. Then Lord Ramachandra personally killed Ravan. Now, that was an incredible battle. Takes up a few chapters. And now, here's the point. Ravan could not be killed. He was under boons from Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. In fact, he did a particular austerity in which he called upon Lord Brahma to give him a blessing. And the blessing was that he would have physical immortality, that nobody could kill him. He would be invulnerable. And he had 10 heads. So, anyway, as I said, he was invulnerable and no one could kill him. Now, in the final battle between Lord Ramchandra and Ravan, there are many battles before that. But in that final battle, Lord Ramchandra was shooting arrows at him, shooting one head off after another. 10 times he shot all his heads off. The heads came back. Because he couldn't be killed. So the heads kept coming and growing back. So finally, his charioteer, who was sent by Indra, he said to Lord Ramachandra, get him in the chest where the nectar is. So implanted in the chest area, in some versions it says the stomach or the abdomen, but Anyway, the full version that I read is that implanted in the chest was this nectar, amrita. Amrita means it keeps you eternal or immortal. Not eternal, but immortal. Nobody can kill you. That was the same nectar that the gods and the demons were fighting over, you know, which they brought up from the ocean of milk in earlier readings that we have had. So Lord Ramachandra, he took out the most powerful weapon. He just took that with an arrow, but he charged it up with the Brahmastra, okay? And it was flaming. Brahmastra is more powerful than even a hydrogen bomb. So powerful is it. So the only way he could kill Ravan was to dry up the nectar. So what better way to do that than with the Brahmastra? So he shot the Brahmastra right into his heart, and that flame was so hot that all the nectar dried up, his heart stopped, and that was the end of Ravan. No more. It was finished. So on Diwali, Festival of Lights, we celebrate the homecoming of Lord Ramachandra after the defeat of Ravan. So everybody in Ayodhya, they light up the different lights. You see millions of lights all over in commemoration of the victory of Lord Ramachandra and the defeat of Ravan. So another thing which happens here is that then Lord Ramachandra personally killed Ravan. Mandodari and other wives lamented for Ravan, and in accordance with Lord Ramachandra's order, Vibhishan performed the funeral ceremony. Vibhishan was another brother of Ravan, as I said, Kumbhakarna and Vibhishan. But Vibhishan was a devotee brother, and he advised very strongly to Ravan, give Sita back. If you don't do that, it will result in the destruction of Lanka and all of your of our kin. Ravan considered him a traitor. He said, how dare you talk to me like that? I'm the most powerful person in the world. I mean, Ravan fits to a T all of the descriptions in the Bhagavad Gita of the person who's proud, you know, who's envious, who thinks he's all-powerful, he's contemptuous. He referred to Lord Ramachandra as a mere man. Now, the interesting thing about that blessing, that boon that he had, is that he could not be killed by any demigod, and he could not be killed by any big-time demon, those that can change their forms. But he never asked for the boon to be not killed by man, because he considered if you're not killed by a demigod and you're not killed by a rakshasa, then what can a man do? So therefore, he forgot that he didn't cover himself completely. And the result was, of course, Lord Ramachandra assumed the form of a man, although he was completely Vishnu Tattva, and just as Lord Nrsingadeva assumed the form of a lion man, although he was completely Vishnu Tattva, it's a Krishna incarnation. So anyway, that's what happened. Mandodari and the wives, they came and they came for the funeral ceremonies for all the dead. And Vibhishan, he did the ceremony. Vibhishan was very helpful in the battle because he knew all the weaknesses of the army. He knew all the weaknesses of Ramachandra. He knew all the weaknesses of the great generals. And he was able to advise accordingly so that the Lord Ramachandra and all of his monkeys could win the battle, and of course they did. Lord Ramachandra then gave Vibhishan the right to rule Lanka, so he got a nice little gift in the process, and also granted him a long duration of life. The Lord delivered Sita Devi from the Ashok forest where she had been staying, and Ravan had threatened that if she did not surrender, submit to him, and marry him, that he would have her killed, and he would eat her liver for breakfast. That's just a nice way to entice a woman to become your, you know, your wife. Anyway, she was not afraid of him, because she had full faith that Lord Ramachandra would rescue her. And when Hanuman arrived on the scene and he reassured her that Lord Ramachandra was waiting on the other side of the ocean with millions of monkeys ready to attack. She felt, of course, reassured and felt very happy and very content. Hanuman, interestingly, he offered to take her on his back. But she was so chaste and also very, very, not only chaste, but her Vaishnav etiquette was so high that she said to him, she said, first of all, the person who should rescue me is my husband. That is his duty. And I want him to get the glory of this. I know I could get on your back as you've asked me, and you could get me to Lanka, and you would be glorified. But really, my business as a wife, as a loving wife, is to get my husband glorified. And I want to see that. So Hanuman respected that. And then she further said that if I'm on your back and you're fighting these Rakshasas, they could fly in the sky. So it wasn't like they were going to fight from the ground and shoot a few arrows at Hanuman. That would be the end of it. They'd be flying alongside of him and throwing arrows and swords and everything like that. So she said, you'd be on the one hand trying to protect me, and on the other hand, trying to fight them, and in the course of doing that, you may lose your attention on the battle, and I might fall into the ocean. So he thought about that, and he says, well, that's a good reason, too. So he decided that her reason was good, right, and just bringing this to an end, Hanuman carried, when Lord Ramachandra, the Lord delivered Sita Devi from the Ashok forest and carried her in a flower airplane to his capital in Ayodhya, where all the lights were on, where he was received by his brother Bharat. Now remember, Bharat was reigning or ruling while Ram was in the forest 14 years. Now this is very fascinating and very important for us as devotees. Bharat never wanted to be the ruler. His mother obtained the kingdom for him. But Bharat didn't want it. Not only that, but he was so angry with her, he even wanted to kill her. That's how much he loved Lord Ramachandra, that he didn't want his brother to be sent to the forest. And he gathered all the troops, brought the troops to where Lord Ramachandra, Sita, and Lakshman were in the forest, and begged Lord Ramachandra, please come back to the kingdom and let me stay in the forest. Nothing would please me more to see you, to know that you're in the forest while I'm in the kingdom, in the palace, where luxury, lying on a bed, soft bed, silken sheets, all this palatable food, I could never bear that. But Lord Ramachandra, he said, you're going to have to bear it. He said, why? He said, well, our forest father made a promise. And the promise that he made to your mother, Kakai, is that he would fulfill the two boons that she asked for. So he was obliged to fulfill those boons. And if he didn't fulfill them, he would be known as what? He would be known as a liar, as an untruthful king. His high reputation would then become lost. So there is nothing more objectionable, more hideous than a warrior who values his respect and is then dishonored. Nothing, death is better than the dishonor. That's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. So anyway, he said to Bharat, he said, I must fulfill the promise that our father made to Kakai, that I, not you, would go to the forest for 14 years and that you would be the king. He said, but I cannot be the king. I'm a younger brother and it goes against my conscience. So he said, okay, then you can rule on my behalf. So Bharat said, well, that sounds okay. So ruling on his behalf means that he's just pro tem. He will do it temporarily until Lord Ramachandra comes back. So then Bharat said, but I may become a little bit lax in my thinking. Could I have your sandals so that I can put them on a chair and I can worship those sandals and I can ask them what my duty is in carrying out what you would like me to do? So Lord Ramachandra took off his sandals and he gave them to Bharat, and Bharat treasured them and he put them on like a seat like this, an asana, and he worshipped them daily. Interestingly, he did not rule from the kingdom. He would not do that. He went to a jungle area. The name of the place escapes me at the moment, but he slept on the floor or on the ground just as Ramachandra did. He put his hair in a top knot. He looked like a sadhu. He wore bark for garments. He would not do anything that would make him feel superior to his brother, Lord Ramachandra. And when finally Lord Ramachandra came back, he presented the sandals back to the Lord, meaning that the lordship or the rulership is now yours. So let me just conclude this now. Yes. Vibhishan and Sugriv held, this is while they're traveling back, held a whisk and fan. Hanuman carried an umbrella. Shatrughan carried the Lord's bow and two quivers. And Sita Devi carried a water pot containing water from where? Holy places. Angada carried a sword and Jambavan, Rikshiraj, carried a shield. After Lord Ramachandra, accompanied by Lord Lakshman and Mother Sita Devi, met all his relatives, the great sage Vasishta enthroned him as king. Last but not least, when Lord Ramachandra ruled, he ruled so firmly and virtuously that there was no such thing in the kingdom of Ayodhya as disease. There was no such thing as earthquakes. There was no such things as hurricanes and cyclones and tornadoes. These are all the results, as Srila Prabhupada mentions so often, of sinful activities, especially cow killing. You commit all of these sins and you get punished. You lose your property, you lose your family, you lose your jobs, you lose your business, you lose your integrity, you lose your life. So that's what... That's what often happens. But during the reign of Lord Ramachandra, since everyone was following his instructions, his guidelines, and acting in a virtuous, upright, rectitude fashion, then what happened is that people lived peacefully, they lived rationally, joyfully, comfortably, and they interacted with one another in a peaceful, loving fashion. And so, therefore, Lord Ramachandra is often, just to sum this up, Lord Ramachandra is looked up to as the ideal man, or incarnation of God as a man. And then we have Lakshman, the ideal brother, Sita, the ideal wife, and Hanuman, the ideal servant. So all of these should provide us, especially with, everyone should read the Ramayana. There are two very wonderful retellings, one by Krishna Dharma and another one, these are Vaishnavas, by the way, Krishna Dharma and the other one by Purna Pragya, and they have done a very nice job, so that if you want to get more information in this, you can do that. And in India, Lord Ramachandra is venerated very highly simply because he presents the ideal man and gives people a role model by which they can model their life. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you. Any questions? Hare Krishna.